Amateur Radio Newsline Report Number 1945, with a release date of November 21st, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Malaysia shows its support of ham radio emergency communications. An unidentified German ham takes on Russian military communications. Japan announces a deep space satellite mission. Some new DMR experiments take place down under. And some space junk turns out to be a new Russian satellite. Find out the details here on Amateur Radio Newsline Report Number 1945, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
Malaysia is including ham radio in its emergency preparedness for the upcoming monsoon season. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, has the details.
Malaysia's Ministry of Communications and Multimedia will ensure that all communication towers, including those used by radio amateurs, will be fully functioning even though they're inundated during the flood season. According to the ministry, several communication towers were inundated during the flood season last year, especially in the Kemaman area. To prevent this happening again, many had already been upgraded so that they were located on higher ground and would not be submerged by the rising waters. A ministry spokesperson noted that there are several areas which could not receive normal communication coverage, but can be contacted using amateur radio. The ministry went on to say that it would cooperate with several amateur radio associations under the Malaysian Communication and Multimedia Commission to assist in terms of information sharing in any flood-affected areas. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, reporting from New Orleans.
In its statement, Malaysia's Ministry of Communications and Multimedia indicated that amateur radio has the ability to provide communications into and out of areas that no other quick response radio service can. An unidentified German amateur station has tried to disturb military transmissions from Russia taking place in the 80-meter band. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has what's known so far.
The action happened on 3.733 megahertz on October 22nd at 2800 hours UTC. The Russian frequency shift, or FSK, transmission is believed to have come from a transmitting site in Kaliningrad. A screenshot photograph taken by International Amateur Radio Union Monitoring Service Observer Wolfgang Hadl, DK2OM, shows a station trying to insert Morse code dashes on the space brakes of the Russian transmission. It also shows the interfering station putting out spurious emissions at least 2 kHz wide. According to the monitoring service, the same unidentified operator is believed responsible for similar transmissions against Russian-based communications in the 40-meter band, but this has yet to be proven. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinfort, NAWB reporting.
At airtime, the source of the interfering signal has not yet been identified. A new backscatter radar on 49.9 megahertz is currently being constructed in Ethiopia. The Bahir Dar Coherent Backscatter Radar is being assembled by researchers from the University of Oulu, Finland, and Boston College here in the United States. The new system will operate just below the 6-meter band using a 16-kilowatt solid-state transmitter and 64 antennas. The return sampling is based on a number of USRPX Model 300 high-performance modular software-defined radios. This is a platform developed by Matt Ettis, N2MJI, that combined two extended bandwidth daughterboard slots covering DC to 6 GHz with up to 120 MHz bandwidth and multiple high-speed interface options. Old Sunspot AR2192, now renamed AR2209, has returned to the side of the sun facing Earth. As this report is being prepared, solar observers say it still poses a threat for strong flares because the sunspot's magnetic field is unstable and harbors the energy required for X-class eruptions. If such flares were to occur, NOAA estimates a 25% chance it will likely have a direct effect on high-frequency communications because AR2209 is almost directly facing Earth. You can keep an eye on AR2207 and other solar happenings by simply taking your web browser to spaceweather.com. A Japanese news report says the asteroid mission Hayabusa 2, planned to launch before year's end, will also carry an amateur radio satellite named Shinan 2. The bird will have an elliptic orbit around the sun and travel to a deep space orbit between Venus and Mars. Shinan 2's inclination will be almost zero, which means it will stay in the Earth's equatorial plane. The distance from the sun will be between 0.7 and 1.3 astronomical units. An astronomical unit is described as 149,597,871 kilometers. Shinan 2 already has a set of IARU coordinated frequencies. These are 437.505 megahertz for its CW beacon, and 437.385 megahertz to be used for WSJT telemetry. It will also carry a mode J inverting SSB and Morse transponder, operating with a lower sideband uplink between 145.940 to 145.960 megahertz, and a UHF downlink from 435.280 to 435.260 megahertz on upper sideband. Shinan 2 is a deep space satellite built by students at Kagoshima University in Japan. Its primary mission is to establish communication technologies with a long range as far as the moon. Bandconditions.com is a newly created website that supplies real-time band condition information to operators wanting to get this up-to-the-minute information. The data provided is based on what the developers call a new ionospheric sounding method called HF ionospheric interferometry, which operates very similarly to the pulsar system used by NASA. Reports are generated and uploaded to the web server every 30 seconds. Header information includes a date, time, and GMT, and a report number in sequential order. A web browser refresh command is also sent so the user does not have to hit the refresh button for the latest report. The web browser does it automatically for them. The display shows the meter band in red and the band quality index as a blue colored number at the bottom of the band scale. To sample it for yourself, go to bandconditions.com and take a look. NDX up front, NL8F says he will be active as V73TM from Arno Island rather than Majuro Island between November 26th and December 3rd. The reason for the change is the hotel next to the airport on Majuro now belongs to the Education Ministry, and hence the move of the operation to Arno. During his stay, he plans to operate on 80 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, with the possibility of some digital operation. QSLs go via K8NA, as shown on QRZ.com. Also word that KK6BT will be operational as TX5W from Rivavaya Island in the Austral Island Group between January 5th through the 11th, 2015. Activity will be on 40 through 10 meters, including the 17 and 12 meter bands, operating exclusively single sideband. His primary objective is to work as many amateurs in Central and Northern Europe as possible during his stay. QSL direct only. And the one many have been waiting to hear, this with the announcement that a team of 12 operators led by UN7PCZ will be active from Bouvet Island as 3Y0F sometime between December 2015 and January 2016. The group plans to be on the island for 2 weeks with 6 stations on the air. More details and a webpage are forthcoming. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WA4FAT audio server in Birmingham, Alabama. Will the early 2000s motion picture Frequency show up on NBC as a weekly series? That could happen if the Peacock Network proceeds with plans to bring the big screen thriller to the home screen on a weekly basis. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, who used to work in Hollywood, has some insight.
For those who have never seen it, the movie Frequency is centered on the character John Sullivan, played by James Cazavale, a New York City police officer in his mid-30s who is still haunted by the tragic death of his firefighter father, Frank, portrayed by Dennis Quaid. The elder Sullivan died 3 decades earlier, and the experience has haunted the younger Sullivan's life ever since. One night, John locates an old ham radio transceiver that belonged to his father and begins transmitting. To his shock, John soon gets a response from his deceased father 30 years in the past. The scientific explanation given is that the aurora borealis is taking place and somehow allowed the two men to communicate across time. John Sullivan uses a contact to warn his father, Frank, of his impending death and gives him the information he needs to survive. But changing what happens with time always has its consequences, and John Sullivan's changing the past inadvertently causes consequences with potentials to be worse for all involved. Now, the industry trade publication The Hollywood Reporter says that NBC is looking to create a television series based on the New Line Cinema thriller. It says that the Peacock Network has already issued a script plus penalty commitment for the series. The term script plus penalty means that even if the show is not produced, that those involved in its initial creation are still paid a fee, but it does not guarantee that the movie or television show will actually be brought into production. And talking about development of Frequency into a TV series, it's reported that Jeremy Carver is writing the script for Warner Brothers Television and would also be the executive producer of the series. Toby Emmerich, who wrote the original movie, will be the co-producer. As with any show in early development, there are a lot of rumors floating around. For example, another industry trade online newsletter says that there is no word yet if any of the film's original cast members will return if Frequency, the television series, gets the go-ahead. But it adds that while unlikely, it may not be outside the realm of possibility. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. In the newsroom in Los Angeles.
The show is in its earliest of development stages, and there is no planned premiere date. If you live in or around Chula Vista, California, and are interested in public service, then listen up. The next Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT Academy, will be offered in May or June 2015. There are a number of classes that include orientation and introduction to disaster preparedness, fire safety, and utility controls. Participants will also learn about disaster medical operations, complete exercises, and witness demonstrations. Be part of light search and rescue operations, as well as learn about disaster psychology and terrorism. Participants must be 18 years old, or if a minor, have the signature of a parent or legal guardian. A team in the United Kingdom that provides a valuable off-road service during natural disasters and searches for missing people has received training in amateur radio. This with word that members of the Wessex 4x4 response team have completed their Amateur Radio Foundation license course. The training was arranged as part of the joint working program between the voluntary agencies with Dorset, with the course being arranged by members of RayNet. The E. Christchurch Amateur Radio Society served as the host organization. The course was funded using part of a grant from the Dorset County Council to Wessex Group in order to support an increase in the group's communication capability in the event of an incident. Earlier this year, the team provided support to emergency services during floods in and around Dorset. Hams Down Under are doing some interesting experimentation using the Digital Mobile Radio, or DMR, voice mode. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, has the details.
On September 7th at 12:45 p.m. local time here in New Zealand, Stephen Jepson, ZL2KG, who was situated at the Stratford Plateau car park on the slopes of Mount Taranaki, worked John Yuldwin, ZL4JY, at his home in Waikanae, over a distance of over 191.7 kilometres. This using the nation's 70-centimeter digital mobile radio simplex frequency on 432.7625 MHz. A Kinect System CS700 handheld, connected to a dual-band mobile antenna, was used at Mount Taranaki, and a Motorola Motor Turbo XPR 5550 mobile, tied to an 8-element Yagi, was used in Waikanae for the contact, with perfect signals in both directions. To test the usable range for DMR relay operation, ZL2KG also tried working through the ZL2 DMR repeater, which is located on Colonial Knob, at a distance of 213 kilometres from his location on Mount Taranaki. What was found was that ZL2KG could receive without any problem, however he could not transmit through the machine. While the repeater was triggered, a voice QSO could not be made through it. By moving closer to the repeater on the top of the Waitotara Hill, which is located 149 kilometres from the ZL2 DMR repeater, voice contact was possible and a two-way QSO made. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, in Nelson, New Zealand.
While not trying to set a record, the distances of these contacts is quite impressive. It also shows the ongoing interest in DMR by the experimenters within the ham radio community. More information on DMR is at va3xpr.net. Some names in the news. Tony Hutchison, VK5ZAI, a communications relay mainstay of the Amateur Radio on Space Station, or the ARIS program, is taking a well-earned break. His involvement so far spans 21 years and includes being the ARIS coordinator for the Asia-Pacific region. His immediate plan is to move to a new location and retire from daily business. While taking a break and arranging school contacts with International Space Station astronauts, he will continue as a well-equipped telebridge station when at home. John Bergman, KC5LK of Brandon, Mississippi, has been named the new CQ Work Call Zones Award Manager effective January 1, 2015. KC5LK has been licensed since 1978 and holds an advanced class license. He has been heavily involved in DX and DXing for over 20 years and is a charter member of the 599 DX Association. Bergman will succeed fellow Mississippian Floyd Gerald, N5FG, who has served the DXing community in this position for the past 11 years. The RSGB has appointed 17-year-old Mike Jones, 2E0MLJ, as chair of its youth committee. Jones was originally licensed as M6TMJ and is currently studying forensic science and criminal psychology at City College in Plymouth, England. He is a member of the QRZ.com staff, helping on the database forum, and is also Youngsters on the Air Month coordinator for the UK. Back here in the USA, retired FCC Special Counsel Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, gave what is being called an inspirational talk at the Forsyth Amateur Radio Club in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, on November 10th. Addressing the group, Hollingsworth explained that while it may seem there is less enforcement activity in amateur radio under current Special Counsel Laura Smith than when he was doing the job, that's not the case. New FCC privacy rules mean that Smith can only release information after an enforcement action has been completed, not when one was initiated, as Hollingsworth did. The talk was recorded and appears as episode 174 of the online amateur radio television series Ham Radio Now. You can catch it on the web at hamradionow.tv and click on the link to episode number 174. Ham Radio Now, of course, is spelled as one word. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Rechargeable lithium-ion batteries are the mobile power sources of choice today, used in everything from laptop computers to handheld transceivers and even automobiles. For years, though, it has been known that they can overheat and even catch fire. Now there may be a new battery material that overcomes this problem. as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Enby, KB3TZD.
The overheating problem is much less likely to happen with batteries made with magnesium, and magnesium ions in battery electrolytes can carry a double positive charge, increasing the device's energy density or the amount of electricity the battery can store. Still, no one has been able to make a commercially viable magnesium ion battery, mostly because of magnesium's high reactivity with other materials in such a cell, which would interfere with the movement of ions through the electrolyte. Now, researchers Liwen Wan and David Pendergast of the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in California have conducted computer simulations that show this reactivity actually isn't a problem. In the October issue of the Journal of the American Chemical Society, they write that the interference is much lower than they had thought, and therefore a magnesium ion battery would be more efficient than expected. On that basis, researchers at the National Cheng Kung University in Taiwan improved the stability of the magnesium ion battery. Fei Yi Hung, one of the three leaders of the team, told the online publication Energy Trends that they accomplished this in part by turning to a new technology that uses electrodes made of magnesium membranes and magnesium powder. The idea of a magnesium ion battery has long been attractive not only because it's less likely to overheat, Hung said, but also that it has up to 12 times the energy density of a lithium ion battery, and its charge-discharge efficiency is 5 times greater. So when can we expect to see magnesium ion batteries hit the consumer market? According to research teams, it will be a while as there are still other technical hurdles to overcome. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Enby, KB3TZD reporting.
More on this story can be found on the web at tinyurl.com/magnesium-batteries. Four new microsats developed in Japan are now on orbit. Carried aloft on Thursday, November 6th, on board a Russian Dnepr rocket were ChubuSat-1, Tsubame, Hatayoshi-1, and QSAT-EOS. ChubuSat has a CW and AX35 downlink on 435.485 MHz with its digipeater uplink on 145.980. Tsubame transmits CW on 437.250 and AX25 data on 437.505 MHz. Signals from Hatayoshi 1 should be found on 467.674 MHz, while QSAT EOS carries an AX25 GMSK payload, but its exact transmit frequency is unknown. Cosmotris launch controllers reported all spacecraft were inserted into their target orbits. On the air, Nathan Banks, KC9HYY, has announced a commemorative operation to honor the memory of the miners who lost their lives on December 6th of 1907. On that date, an explosion at the Monongah mine in West Virginia killed 362 workers and stands as the worst in the history of mining in the United States. In memory of those who lost their lives on that date, KC9HYY will be using his call stroke MMD from December 5th through December 14th. Operations will be on 40 through 10 meters using single sideband and PSK-31. QSL via KC9HYY as listed on QRZ.com. NDX, SM6JBC, and SM6GOR will be on the air from Mauritius as 3B8JB and 3B8HB until November 26th. Operations are on the high-frequency bands using SSB, PSK31, and PSK63. QSL via their home call signs, either direct or via the Bureau. G3VPW will be active from Falkland Islands through December 12th, operating as VP8KF. He will be active on 80 through 10 meters. He also plans to use the special call VP8KF/100, QSL via his home call or electronically using Logbook of the World. Members of Lufthansa Amateur Radio Club of Frankfurt will be active as 4S7DLG from Sri Lanka until November 27th. Operators mentioned are DK7TF, DH6ICE, and DH0RAK. Operations should be on all HF bands using CW and SSB. QSL via DK8ZZ. JJ2RCJ will be active stroke AH2 from KH2JU's rental shack on Guam between December 27th through the 30th. Activity will be focused on 30, 17, and 12 meters, mainly using RITI. QSL direct to JJ2RCJ or electronically using Logbook of the World. DJ8VW will be operational as 5P8VW from Romo Island between December 6th and the 21st. Activity on 160 through 6 meters, including the 30, 17, and 12 meter bands, using CW and SSB. QSL via DJ8VW, direct only, or electronically using Logbook of the World or EQSL. Lastly, and subject to weather conditions in the area, JI3DST will be active stroke 6 from Takara Island between 0600 UTC on December 27th through 0000 UTC January the 4th. Operations will be on 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, FM, and some of the digital modes. QSL to JI3DST stroke 6 via the Bureau or by Club Logs OQRS. And finally, it's well known that there is a lot of junk in Earth orbit. But once in a while, a piece of space debris is not what everyone thinks it to be. As we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Hal Rogers, K8CMD.
What was first thought to be a piece of debris left over from the launch of three Russian military communications satellites has turned out to be a fourth bird that is actually on orbit and capable of maneuvers. The three satellites were designated Cosmos 2496, 2497, 2498, and were launched this past May. An analysis of orbital elements from a United States space radar showed that a ghost spacecraft that had been thought to be debris from the launch had made a definite controlled maneuver between May 29th and May 31st. On June 24th, the mysterious spacecraft started maneuvering again, lowering its perigee by 4 kilometers and lifting its apogee by 3.5 kilometers. The object continued its maneuvers in July, and its perigee was lowered sharply, bringing it close to the launch vehicle's upper stage, which had originally delivered all 4 payloads into orbit. This is the second time a Russian piece of orbital junk has suddenly started maneuvering while on orbit. The first time was in early 2014, after a December 2013 launch. At that time, the Russians admitted, 5 months later, that the supposed junk was actually another satellite.
Whatever else may be circling the Earth from space launches of years and decades past is likely only known to those nations that put it on orbit. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW, saying 73 from Charleston, West Virginia. And we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014. All rights reserved.